Yay.
Hey,
Big Sean.
So
Be
what's up?
quiet.
Subscribe
I know
to
I have to be
Simply Be
quiet.
Cool. Yeah, shh.
Hey, Sean.
Have we started yet?
Is
All
it
right.
live?
This is
Welcome,
fun.
everybody. Welcome in. This is another episode of the Meme Factory stream. This is stream test number 72. Anybody who's been watching for any amount of time knows that there will never be a real stream. These are all stream tests. That way we can't be canceled. This
Awesome.
evening, we are joined by Luke Broyles. Luke, if you could give
Or I guess that's.
the folks here the elevator pitch of who the F you are. Let's get that knocked out of the way before we can get on with the show here.
Okay, my name is Luke. I'm 23 years old. Full screen here. So I discovered Bitcoin in 2017, like most people. I ignored it. 2019, I started paying attention again. Early 2020, I really started paying attention. 2021 was my first bot, and early 2022 is when I fully understood the societal implications of it. And so early 2023, about a year later, is when I made my first Twitter thread online. It kind of blew up, more or less, or at least blew up in the very small niche pond of Bitcoiners. And so a lot of people have asked me to come on their shows, and including you guys. So I'm happy to be here. And I gotta be honest, I've never watched one of your shows before, but I've heard very good things, and I know Yellow, and I'm really excited for this. So it's gonna be great.
Look, if you've never seen the show
Hopefully.
before, you're in good company with most of the rest of the world. Now,
Wait, hold on. We got millions of fans worldwide. I don't know what you're
yeah.
Fans is one thing. Watching the
That's
show is
not
another.
for fuck's sake, son. First of all, son, I told you many times, we are not in a porno. Like, can you like lift a camera up or something? This making me uncomfortable.
No.
Why? Why is it making you uncomfortable?
It's like the, you know. I'll see if you use it.
I mean, you're short anyway, so I mean
God damn
that would
it.
be your
I'm a
perspective
puppet.
looking at
You
Sean.
can. I'm normal height.
For a puppet.
Yeah, you're for the lap, so. Anyway.
All right, we're alienating the guest here, Luke. One of the things we discussed briefly before you came on the Zoom call here is that one of our sponsors, Suscorp, requires that the guests read the ad copy for us. They don't like us for some reason, but it's in your DMs. If you could check it and just
Okay.
rip on through it so we can continue with the show and get paid, that would be fantastic.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. This is Luke Broyles, and this episode of the Meme Factory TM podcast is brought to you by Suscorp's newest product, the Hopium Nebulizer. The Hopium Nebulizer is the ultimate solution for bear market woes, whether you're suffering from a sell-off, misplaced hardware wallet, or the latest FUD from mainstream media. This powerful device delivers fast and effective relief right where it hurts, your ham flour. Okay. The problem with so many hopium dispensers is that they cover the mouth and nose, which makes conversation and comprehension difficult. Our easy-to-use interface makes it simple for anyone to operate. Just insert the hopium hose from the nebulizer about 6 inches into the prison purse, and you can get the relief at the touch of a button. With its compact and portable design, you can take it with you wherever you go, ensuring you never have to suffer through the butt hurt of another rug pull. Plus, it's discreet. I've got mine in right now. Don't let the bear market woes control your life. Try your nebulizer today and speculate harder tomorrow. There you go.
Thank you so much, Luke.
Thank you.
All right. Do I need to get paid for that?
You don't
Another
need to.
profitable week.
Oh,
Yes.
okay. That's
Making
fair.
things and stuff before all you people.
Must be
Okay.
funny.
All right. So, how does it feel to be finally on a podcast?
First, let's say a thank you to our
Son of a
real
bitch.
sponsor,
Coinbits.
Coinbits.
Yes.
Craig.
Thank you, Coinbase.
The way.
Did you say Coinbase?
Coinbits.
Oh, Coinbits. Okay.
All right, Luke. So if you had a favorite three-letter agency for which you absolutely didn't work, which three-letter agency would it be and why?
If I had to work for a three-letter agency?
No. Which three-letter agency is your best? And we know you absolutely don't work for any of them. You are not a Fed.
Yes.
Clearly not a Fed.
Yes, I'm not
you
a
didn't
spook.
Appear out of nowhere. You're not getting boosted.
Yeah.
Which would be your favorite of the threes?
Oh goodness. I don't know.
Just like a spook.
Yeah, just no like, answer.
Oh no. The more I hesitate, the worse it looks.
Mm.
No,
Fed are more likable.
What are my options? Okay, Fed, that's not a good one. CIA,
NSA.
I don't know. NSA, FBI, what are the others?
EEA.
EEA, EPA.
Isn't there like a guns? GSA, isn't there like a gun one?
DOJ,
ATF,
ECB,
what is it?
DCA,
NRS. Yeah, what is ATF?
Oh, yeah, DCA.
DOJ. Yeah, DCA.
That's a good one.
DCA, that's
how about American MGU? Postman?
And don't forget that you can DCA with Coinbits.
Yeah, DCA with Coinbits. With your nebulizer. It's actually funny. It's funny reading that because I used to have a nebulizer. So it's, I've come full circle here.
We do our homework in the Meme Factory, Luke.
Yes, you do your homework. My asthma is now transformed to smash buying Bitcoin. So,
all right. So, you caught my attention recently when you described your framework for
about the Sammies.
Oh, geez, yeah. God, I'm just all over the place tonight. Becca, Jesus Christ, get your sandwich order out of the way.
Okay, Luke.
Yes.
We do something special here. You get to experience Becca's Sammy shop. So I have three sandwiches here for you. Let the camera just focus in. So you can pick one of the three. We have a Rising Star Breakfast Sammy, locally sourced bacon and eggs, blessed by Pastor Preston. And this includes 21 podcast appearances. So it might be beneficial for you and your Rising Star. Our second special tonight, we have the Cheesy Silvergate Melt. This is a contagiously cheesy mix of financial tricks and some good old American fraud topped with, get this, salted Winklevoss tears. I was able to collect those this morning, so they're fresh. And tonight we have a coin or a BTC pin special, Yellow's Don't Stop Believing Steak Sammy. It's been marinated in Red Bull for 488 days. So these are your three specials you have. And Yellow, he's always like up to no good. So,
yeah, well, I mean, the first one, the Rising Star, I think that's automatically out because my star is rising is not particularly a good thing to say. Although Preston's pretty convincing. Oh, I think you know why.
that was my last Instagram caption is my star is rising.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know which sandwich is the most rare. Which one's the most scarce?
I would say a rising star is the most
scarce. No. Okay. I guess I have to go with that regardless of my opinion. So yeah, let's do that. I'll do a rising star breakfast with Pastor Preston. Okay.
Beautiful. Coming right up. Yep.
Well done. Yep. Well done.
Good.
All right. Am I forgetting anything else before I report it?
No.
I'm a mess. That's it. Yeah, it's happening. So you laid out a framework that I found very interesting. Big fan of the book Layered Money. And you talked about different layers in the natural world. So like the natural layer, an energy layer, an information layer, a monetary layer. Could you break that down Barney style for the people who are watching? We're not all that bright, but we can follow along if you use small words and hand gestures.
Yeah. So I I mean, I've explained this to the shows, but I think the basic way to put it is that basically we're trending towards more hyperabundance and we're trending towards a more globalized society. And as we progress to that, and as we have been progressing to that for centuries and thousands of years, we inevitably have to have global systems. The first, most basic of those global systems is a global grid of energy that can convert all the many different kinds of energy from the natural world into a consistent form of energy. And that's the electric grid. No matter where we're getting energy from, coal or solar or nuclear or natural gas or burning wood, we can convert all of it into electricity. And on top of that, secondly, we have to have an informational layer. And the global system for doing that we've decided upon is the global computational computer network, like the computer I'm using now. We've decided to use binary, ones and zeros for our system. The internet was third. There were many attempts to make the internet and many original internets, but the decentralized one and the one outside the control of any singular entity was the one that won. The one that won. And then the system after that, the neural system, is you need a system of value that using the energy that can be converted from the natural world and communicating over space and time via the internet information. I mean, that's what money is. It's energy, it's information, and it's energy and information that be communicated. The layer on top of all that is monetary. And I would argue that's Bitcoin. Hopefully everyone in here agrees that that's a strong possibility at the very least. But yeah, that's the basic idea of having different levels of the system.
Okay.
Yep.
And the new layer,
Yeah.
the one that we're all here talking about discussing, is what, the information and value layer, correct?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. Or did you say
Yes.
yes, sir?
Yes, sure. Agree. Yep.
All right. And we all think that's going to be, internet, Bitcoin, the information value layer. How do you get value that exists on today's monetary layer to transition to an information age or an information layer?
Yeah. I was thinking about this earlier because, you guys in the meme factory, you deal in memes, and I don't know, that's something I was thinking about because the Bitcoin community loves memes. We love memes. And we love memes so much that there's a whole show based on memes. And I think there's really something to that. It's been said before, but perhaps not by me, but basically the idea being that Bitcoin is sort of a meme. And I would argue that all forms of money are basically memes because a meme is basically just a piece of information that gets passed around between humans. And the most successful meme is the one that has the most iterations of itself, the one that is most commonly recognized among all the people. It doesn't matter if it's a picture or it's a video or it's a funny story, or perhaps it's, that those are more modern examples, but going back in time, perhaps it's a certain fable or tale or myth or legend of, some sort of ancient society. Those basically are memes to a certain degree. And I think money is a form of meme, and perhaps it's the most important meme. It's the most successful meme of all because it is the meme that everyone, irregardless of their ethnicity, their political origin, or their view in the world, everyone needs money to exchange value with one another. And so no matter where you are in history, there is a the most successful meme of its time is money, and the most successful money of that time is the most successful meme of that time. And so, you have salt and grain as a successful meme, more or less, or the idea of counting barrels and bushels of salt and grain was very popular in the ancient world. And then you have that condensing down to a harder money, a more immutable money, and a money that is better. It's a better form. It's like memes, how memes are funny. It's like the funniest meme wins. It's in a similar idea. It's like the hardest money wins, the best money wins, the money that's the most immutable, the most outside human control, and the most reliable and dependable in its monetary schedule over time. That's the funniest meme. And so gold was funnier. It was a more successful meme than its predecessor, and so it survived and thrived. And then after gold, now we have political energy, treasuries, and fiat currency, and obviously it's significantly worse over time. But
Luke, I want to back up a little bit and challenge you on some of that. So
sure.
I think just about anybody in here is going to agree that, you know, memes are just information.
Yeah.
Whether you watermark it or not, you know, information wants to be free. Mm-hmm. And that's been, you know, a capping point of this information layer, is that all of it wants to be free anyway. So
yeah.
Going back to the question then, how can you take something that's in the information layer and then ascribe value to it? Right. How does the value flow into the information layer? Like I get that money, the idea of money is a meme, right? So like you see a picture of gold coins in somebody's hands, you recognize, you know, any human on earth today is going to recognize that represents money. That's fine. That meme people get, but then you also got to produce the gold in order to transact value.
Well, that's kind of my point, that I think the meme or the monetary idea that survives, I think how we ascribe value to that is based on the number of people that recognize it. That's kind of my point there, that each successive iteration of money, if it becomes more recognizable in the eyes of people that use money and the global share of people that use money, if it becomes more recognized and they have higher conviction in it than, say, the other one, I think that is the more valuable
form of
money. I think you just used a word that I totally agree. You said use. Like, there's another level to the virality and the success that the meme presents at first.
Yeah.
After that, it has to be used, right? That's where the true success comes. Like, at first, it's going to be okay. Virality, everybody knows it. Everybody understands it, like a meme, like an idea. Call it what you want. But in the second level, as gold did after thousands and thousands of years, it got used in the end, right?
Yeah. Yep. I think it's not just recognizing it's a better one. I think it's also having conviction in it. So it's not just the number of users. It's also the conviction and the amount of use that the users have with it.
Even if they don't know it. Even if they don't know it.
I don't know, guys.
Yeah. They use it, we don't care.
It's interesting because
I'm not buying it.
Here's what I think, right? I think in the information level, it also has to be scarce. And I think that's what Bitcoin has provided, is scarcity at the information level.
Yeah. Yeah, it's superior ability to have verifiable scarcity is what makes it a better idea than other forms of money. You know, I would say gold is a better idea than cash over time, because it's much harder to mine more gold than it is to add another zero to a spending bill. But I think Bitcoin's a better meme and a better idea because of what you just said, that it's more scarce. So, and I think the world will wake up to that. I think the world is slowly waking up to that, as we all know. So
when do you think that's gonna come? Like, when are we gonna transition from Bitcoin being a meme, like a good idea, to Bitcoin being like an archetype, like the kind of idea that we don't even think and we use it because it's so useful?
I don't know. I think it depends on your definition. I mean, I think right now there's, you know, I mean, if we think of this as an idea of a fixed ledger, I mean, all, like, theoretically, it existed all the way back to 1900 with Tesla, you know, back in the 1900, 1910s, 1920s. Maybe there were a couple dozen people that wanted to create what today we call Bitcoin. You know, Henry Ford was one of those folks that tried to make it all the way back in the 20s. Obviously, he failed because we didn't have the information layer. But I mean, you know, today there's what, 3 to 5 million hardcore Bitcoiners, maybe less, maybe more, I don't know. But I mean, I think it's already happening. I mean, if you're asking when is there going to be 5 billion, I don't know. couple decades, or
well,
I certainly think our lifetime. But
you say you don't know, but little birdie told us that you had a conversation recently
with a whale.
With a whale.
Oh,
who thinks that hyper-Bitcoinization is coming a lot faster than most think?
Yeah, great, great new camera, Becca. Yeah, great new camera.
Oh my God, it died on me.
Much better.
Wow. Okay. So, actually, I was just talking to him earlier today too. I don't know if he's a whale or not. So I don't know. I don't think I called him a whale. If I did, that's probably not accurate, but I don't think I did. But he was just really bullish. He had viewpoints I'd not heard of ever before. Basically the same idea that Bitcoin is a monetary singularity, takes over everything, but you know, he was just much more bullish on his time frame. And
if his name were a rhyme, what would that rhyme be?
Preston Fish?
No.
Fickle Snailer.
No, nobody like that. You know, I'd love to get Michael Saylor uncensored. That'd be fascinating. Hear what he really thinks.
It is fascinating.
I think he's pretty uncensored anyway, with how he is. No, but
you haven't heard him talk about memes yet. Uncensored.
No, he's hiding a lot more.
All right, so you said this person who shall remain unnamed, Jeff Booth, is told you some things that you hadn't thought of before. Now I'm very interested in this person's name.
Nick Bhatia.
Nick Bhatia. And B, number two, what are the points?
B number two? Did you say B number two?
I say what I want to say when I want to say it, sir.
Yeah. I don't know. He's going on shows later to talk about it. He knows much more of this than I do. Basically, he has like an accounting and banking background. So his thought is, what if Bitcoin is not? Yeah, his thought
plan
is
B.
What? No, no.
Plan.
No.
Vierre Schmosnard.
No. but basically his idea is, what if Bitcoin's adjustable markets are not just store value instruments and instruments and currencies, but what if it's much more than that? And you know, with the derivatives market, which frankly is a market I don't understand that well, and previously I'd not consider it because you know most derivatives just net out. But he thinks for a variety of accounting rules and regulations that Bitcoin has a significantly larger adjustable market after it attacks gold and real estate and bonds and stocks. Then he thinks it's theoretically even more, which I mean, you know, that's not even the most bullish thing. It's just,
look, you already pitched a hopium throwing device earlier this evening. So hit us. Why is it so hopium bullish? Thing. What kind hopium of numbers are we talking about? How are we achieving these?
Oh, I mean,
what kind of numbers?
You know what numbers? It's all the same idea that theoretically Bitcoin's exchange rate with every political currency just surpasses infinity, or reaches infinity, or approaches infinity forever is probably the best way to put it. You know, I mean, if 1% or 2% or 3% of nations allocated, you know, that's millions of dollars per Bitcoin. If you assume any rate of inflation, that's tens of millions of dollars per Bitcoin. If you assume that they allocate more, like 10%, 20%, 30%, then that's hundreds of millions, billions of dollars per Bitcoin. Add inflation on top of that, and then you have future prosperity. And it's just, you know, really, it's more or less an oxymoron to try to price Bitcoin in terms of cash. I think it makes much more sense to try to price Bitcoin in terms of prosperity, or perhaps in terms of years of prosperity.
Okay.
So like how many years can I live?
Yeah. How many prosperity units per Bitcoin are you thinking?
I just think continues up theoretically forever.
All the prosperity units.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Depends what you're asking. Like, I think as long as humanity survives and as long as we don't discover something significantly better than Bitcoin, I think the amount of prosperity Bitcoin could buy will just increase in a volatile fashion forever, and it will only get more volatile. a lot of people think that it'll get less volatile, but I actually think it's getting less volatile before it gets significantly more volatile. Number one, because inflation will have to get more volatile. Number two, because other asset classes, as inflation gets more volatile and interest rates get more volatile, will have to get more volatile. And number three, because technology is an exponential curve. And even before we consider inflation and all other asset classes, if technology's rate of change gets faster and faster and faster, the progress will continue to just spike upwards, aka volatile, theoretically forever, as long as we can continue to innovate. So as long as innovation continues and as long as humanity continues, I think the amount of prosperity any amount of Bitcoin, whether it's a whole Bitcoin or one sat could buy, would just go up. And I think that in the same way that, at the early 19th century, where you have both the existence of the locomotive and yet everyone, or at least the vast majority of people, still use horses as a preferred medium of transportation, I think we're kind of like a similar weird period where Bitcoin exists and yet fiat currencies still have a major role in the world. I think history will look back on these 2 or 3 decades here between 2009 and say 2030, 2040, 2050 as like a really weird period in history where two contradictory ideas existed.
It's the transition.
It's
Yeah,
the transition.
Was
great transition.
the whale Frank Underwood, maybe?
Sure, it was Frank Underwood, yeah.
Who's that?
Sean, did you say you're transitioning?
This is the great transition.
Oh my.
So you brought up
I've been thinking of something.
You're thinking aloud?
If it's 21 million over infinity or over everything.
Infinity over 21 million, yeah.
Sorry, an infinity over 21 million. I keep saying that wrong. Isn't that the same as infinity over one?
Yeah. Yeah, the number is irrelevant. It just has to be finite.
It's
Deep
infinity.
Thoughts with Sean Harris.
I'm just saying.
Yeah,
Like,
no, you're not wrong. I'm...
one will be equal to 21 million.
No.
Well, no.
The point is that anything into infinity, as long as it's a, let's call it an integer, it's going to be the same result.
Well, yeah. Basically, yeah. I mean, technically, even the, I mean, technically, there's multiple problems with the infinity over 20 million. Technically, it shouldn't be infinity because we're approaching infinity. And technically, it's not 21 million because it's what, 20,999,989.98 bitcoins. You know, so I mean,
just elaborate when you need them.
Yeah,
Yeah.
the numbers are irrelevant. It just has to be fixed and finite and not be able to change. So yeah.
It makes me think that like Bitcoin as a money will be an integer. It'll like will approach the perfect money, and then we won't need money. I don't know. It's a weird thought.
Yeah, unless it turns into like digital gold, right? I mean, gold is better money than fiat money, and yet only like we got like just a couple of gold bugs using it, and people still, get caught up in
Yeah.
the whole government scam and use fiat money. And gold never really made it into sound money, so why would Bitcoin? Why will Bitcoin?
Because
Maybe it's just
transportability.
it. Maybe it's just for the select few that get it. Maybe the masses just won't get it.
Maybe.
Shout out to
That's an interesting thought. That's interesting. What if, my assumption is that eventually everyone will adopt Bitcoin, but what if there are people that voluntarily by choice never want to adopt just because, I don't know, that's interesting.
Self-custody is the to me, that's the Bitcoin standard, where
Yeah,
everyone
sure.
self-custody.
I agree with that. I mean, I guess I'm more just, I don't know the name of the person with the child with the giant earphone. Plan Marcus. Okay. But Plan Marcus is, boy, I
You can
don't
say
know. That's
Marcus, that's
yeah, you
fine.
can just call him Marcus.
Marcus. Okay,
Yeah.
Marcus. That's an interesting thought. What if some people never adopt? Because, like for example, Amish people, they never adopted computers or the internet or the electric grid. I wonder if.
But
Yeah,
they use batteries and cell phones.
I know, and
Greg's from Pennsylvania. He knows. He knows the Amish.
I'm aware of that, but basically, I wonder if there will be groups of people in the future, whether they're religious or political groups is kind of irrelevant, I think. But
monetary Luddites.
Maybe, you know, like maybe that's possible. That someday there's a small group of people that never adopt Bitcoin. They just always prefer an endlessly decreasing gold or cash. But I mean, I don't know. I think that's very.
They'd be like minuscule. They'd be like people that are like lost in the Amazon who just don't use money at all.
Well, yeah. Those people exist. That they're, you know, perhaps obviously those people may not ever use Bitcoin, but perhaps there are people that intentionally more or less go backwards in time voluntarily because they don't like Bitcoin for whatever reason. Maybe that happens. I don't know.
I've
never thought about that before. That's interesting.
It's just that we're all like very agreeable here about it's gonna, you know, take over the world and we're all gonna see it that way. So I like to push back a little bit. But I mean, I can think of a scenario, right, where like all right, we've got all these powerful, you know, power always accrues, right? You know, whether and you know, with power comes money. So for some reason, it'll, you know, like the Bitcoins will find its way into like smaller pockets of people, possibly, right? Whether it's governments figure out in a way how to, you know, tax people and they start collecting all the Bitcoins in Fort Knox or a new digital Fort Knox, whatever. And, you know, we might end up in 50 years on the same situation where they say, well, we've got this big reserve of Bitcoin, and just to keep it safe, we're going to create like this digital token on top of it. And here we are again, you know, now it's like fiat backed by Bitcoin again, and they go off and print too much again.
Yeah. Yeah, perhaps everyone adopts Bitcoin, but that human emotion wants to create that second layer on top of it, and we end back in the same spot. Yeah, I think it's possible. And
we're ignoring all the other coins in existence. Will Doge be still around?
Shut up, Marcus.
Yeah, I definitely think it's possible. I think the way I would put it is that I don't think it's the most probable scenario, and I think the only alternative to Bitcoin is that anyway. So if we have a 100% chance of repeating this fiat Ponzi in 80 years or 50 years, say, without Bitcoin, and maybe a 20%, 10%, 5%, 50%, whatever percent, and assign it with Bitcoin, I still think Bitcoin is the more worthwhile path. But yeah, perhaps.
You guys are just, I don't know if you're fucking with me or not, but you're all not mentioning the reason gold failed is money, because it was easily confiscatable, right? It's centralized.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's why with fiat won as a medium for transaction, right?
So yeah. Like,
if, portability. I mentioned portability earlier.
Portability too.
But like that's it. Back to Sean and self custody, right? You can self custody Bitcoin, and there's not as much chance for centralization and capture. Right? It's way more difficult for that to happen, and it's already got its own layer two built on. It's got two of them. You got liquid and.
I mean, they tried to confiscate booze. They try to confiscate drugs. You can't do that.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, look at, like, literally today, it's very timely. What the United States is doing is they're selling off the Bitcoin they've confiscated from Mt. Gox, right?
Do we know that for sure?
You got pushed.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, it just happened today. I believe so. Perhaps it's fake news, but I'm pretty sure it's the case that.
No, even from the older days, like Draper got like confiscated Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I'm pretty sure
that's a known practice. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like even if they confiscate it, the only way to get things from people is to exchange the Bitcoin for it. So I mean, even if they were able to confiscate, I don't see a way they could retain that power long term. They would just be forced to sell it back, perhaps at a higher price. But I don't think it's possible for them to just continue gaining via confiscation.
Yeah, but like, isn't government like a slow turning ship? Like, don't you think that has to do with bureaucracy? More like they don't have already the infrastructure.
What are you saying? Because it's hard to understand. Is government's like a slow turning ship? And
yeah.
New Malacca, Greg.
Anyway, there's the Nick and Griff show asks, how do you think Bitcoin will impact large scale commercial real estate?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Large scale commercial real estate. Well, I don't know. I guess my view, which is just my view, but I think real estate is probably at a lower risk than bonds or stocks. And my reason for that is that for people's retirement portfolios, both in the US and abroad, that stocks and bonds have been much more monetized than real estate. You know, like if bonds are 95, 98, 99% monetized and stocks are 60% monetized, real estate seems to be like 30, 40, 50%, something like that monetized. You know, obviously, depending on your area, that's the thing with real estate. It's all completely dependent on location. I'm sure there are properties that are 90% monetized and properties that are 0%.
And Luke,
But
when you say monetized, you're talking about a monetary premium attached to this.
yeah, like a monetary premium, you know, like a bond is entirely hot air, and that it's all just a promise. But real estate, you have
Store
the
value.
land's value, the building's value, and then the premium we give it from issuing all these mortgages and all this cheap money. So yeah, definitely real estate's overvalued. The other thing too, though, is that comparing American real estate to the rest of the world, like comparing the US to Canada or Australia or parts of Europe, it's like crazy. Like you think American real estate is expensive. It's absurd. And so when I just think of that, those two things, that number one, I think fundamentally real estate is less monetized than those other assets. And number two, that it seems that American stocks and bonds are monetized much more than foreign stocks and bonds. And likewise, perhaps foreign real estate is monetized much more than American real estate. I think, so anyway, the original question being, what do I think about, you know, multifamily real estate? I think there's risk to it. I think there's lower risk to it than many other assets. I do think it will trend down against a Bitcoin. But then the other thing I have to keep in mind too is financing. You know, that's the other thing with real estate people completely forget about is financing. If you can get a fixed rate debt, get fixed rate debt against that real estate, which you can't do with bonds or stocks or leases easily, like that's a pretty big deal. Because the mortgage, as long as it's fixed and it's as long as it's native in fiat, you know, the value of that mortgage in relation to property should theoretically go down forever. So even if the real estate goes down against Bitcoin forever, the mortgage will go down against the real estate probably faster than the real estate would down against Bitcoin, or maybe as faster. You know, I don't know. That's more or less a speculation, but anyway, that's just some musings I have. I don't think it's. I think it all depends on frame of reference and the math and where you're coming from.
I was a totally different question right here. Did you say you were 23?
Yeah, correct.
So were you are, did you are you in college still, or did you just finish college?
Is Sean gonna ask?
No, I'm not gonna ask that.
No, I've not finished college. No, I've not finished college.
Are you in college, or
Most.
did you just like say, hey, you know what, that's kind of not worth my time?
I'm currently taking classes online, which has been quite a lot between that plus work plus now this Bitcoin personality thing online. But I'm doing it. I'm surviving.
What are you studying?
Well, just general finance and real estate, just because that's the closest thing to this. You know, there's no Bitcoin major, but you know, frankly, I'm finding less and less of incentive to finish. You know, because my time's just getting so busy, and it's like even with scholarships and even with help from family financially, it just doesn't make sense. So anyway, I don't know what all that holds, but right now I'm just putting all my time and attention as much as I can into preparing for the next halving the next few years. So
We're all pretty old, right? So it's been a while since we've seen a college. Like, what did, like, if you look around in like your, I don't know if you still go to actual physical class. You said you were doing
no,
online classes.
I don't.
All
I
right.
can't stand it.
Okay.
That just.
I was just curious, you know, like what percentage of that like college class do you think would are like what is their stance towards Bitcoin? Do they hate it? Do they think it's bad for the environment? Are they interested in it? Like, is it this, you know, generational thing that
I've
once you
talked to a
guys
lot
reach
of.
the age of 40? Go ahead.
I've talked to a lot of
40. Come
finance
on.
and tech professors, both at the colleges I've taken classes from, as well as many other colleges, both online and virtually. And yeah, I think the vast majority don't understand Bitcoin. I think the vast majority of people, and parents especially, I don't think they realize how little is being taught in classes. And like, that's why I don't go to in-person class anymore, just because it's like, it was like a drain. It felt like it was a drain on my brain. At least with the online classes, I'm learning a little bit and I can do it in my own time. And if I want to take a quiz without studying, because I know I don't have to study, then I can just do that, you know. So anyway, all I say, I don't think people realize how low the bar is for college, and it's really alarming. I know so many people that have five figures or six figures of college debt, and with no disrespect to that, they have very little skills, they have no prospects, they have no assets, they have no marketable edge. And as that curve of technology I always talk about gets steeper, the unique marketable abilities that humans will add to the marketplace will only get more difficult. I don't know if it'll ever get impossible, but it'll only get more difficult because the amount of stuff you need to learn will increase, and the rate at which you'll need to learn it will increase, and the amount of artificial intelligence, algorithms, bots, whatever you want to say, that can do what you do as good as you do, or even just half as good as you do, will only increase exponentially. So anyway, I think all these things are related. I think the lack of college professors understanding Bitcoin and the hyperabundance of scholarships and grants and stimulus to help college students, it's all related. And this is why it's like the rabbit hole, because you realize, like, oh wait, this is all one problem or one trend that's happening, and Bitcoin is the other side of that trade.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm 33, right? So I'm 10 years older than you.
Huh.
And like when I was growing up, it was like,
Math major.
it was like go to college, get a degree, right? But I also played basketball, so like that made more sense for me because I got a scholarship to play basketball, and then now I'm playing overseas. But like if I could go back, and if I wasn't playing basketball, I don't know if I would even go to college. Like thinking about like the future of like sometimes I think, what's the point? It seems like a big scam. It may not even be worth it, and there's a lot of different things, especially when you go down the rabbit holes of Bitcoin. And there's a lot of different things that you can explore, and you don't need to have a college education to be able to build and to work and to grow a business nowadays.
I think it's still a good idea to educate yourself, to be honest, and to
Oh,
actually
definitely.
like learn something and get a skill in a field you're interested in. But I think a lot of the information is free, or even better, that you can find it online. And if you're willing to put it work in, I guess the big benefit of college or university is that you have somebody who curates all that information for you, so you don't have to like look for what is bullshit. You kind of trust on your professor to put a good program together for you, so it's just bite-sized, ready to go. But I mean, in general, why do you have to like rack up a debt of like $1 million? That seems insane, but
Well,
you have to.
that's an excellent point about how the college class curated for you so that, if there's all this noise plus single and 95% of it is noise, the college class is supposed to just give you the signal, the stuff that matters.
Exactly.
But
That's kind of
what
like the
happens,
value add from their side, right? It's like if I
that's the value
have to
add, but
learn
we
about
can save you
Bitcoin and
time.
I go to YouTube and I Google it, you're gonna like be bombarded with a wall of trash, basically. All these influencers and people trying to sell you something, and you kind of have to work your way through it and find out what's the signal where the information is.
But yeah, I mean, that's what's supposed to be. But what happens when the incentives are corrupted and the noise starts to get added back into the college? Well, now it takes time to learn via for free for internet and library and books, and it takes time to learn via college, and both of them have signal and both of them have noise, except one of them costs you money. I mean, all of a sudden the marketable edge of college goes down, seems to me.
When I was 23, I was not thinking about money at all. I was thinking about basketball and girls. So that's kind of I don't know how you're like what's in your background that makes you so focused on Bitcoin at this age?
I've always found history interesting. I mean, even when I was like 10 or 8 or 9, or even when I was in elementary school, I loved history. I found it fascinating, as well as science. And technology basically is science and history. You know, to understand history and science, you have to understand technology. So, I mean, anyway, it was just general curiosity for the world, especially 2015 to 2020 that really blossomed. I found, you know, Elon Musk interesting, and I found all the technology interesting, and everything he was doing. And I remember how the technology of my life changed so dramatically, and how, well, I have a smartphone now and I can do all these things on it. And anyway, I just had a general interest in that. And then, you know, one of the things I realized too is that monetary events are greatly underappreciated in history, and that, you know, we tend to appreciate war and disease and conflict, you know, things that are easy to date and take pictures of and, you know, reference in a history book. But monetary events, people tend to underappreciate. And so kind of the merging of those, plus then the external environmental factor of the pandemic and the lockdowns, those things together in 2020 kind of forced me to realize something's going on here.
I didn't appreciate any of that.
But I guess just a general curiosity.
Stop
I
mean, it. To Greg be, is a, hold on, Luke. Greg is a freaking genius, and he tries to play a dummy. Just so you can know.
Okay. Sure, I'll buy that.
That's true.
Very true.
Thanks, Sean.
He's doing a good job. He's doing a really good job right now.
He's doing a good job looking dumb. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. He especially chose those glasses.
Yeah. Right.
I think it's a good point you made, though. I mean, people don't focus in on the monetary history.
Yeah. And I think the same is going to happen here. I think the vast majority of people will not adopt Bitcoin because they understand what's happening. I think they just will. You know, I think one day it will be legendary that the whole Bitcoin was under $1 million. I think it'll be legendary that I'm assuming all six of us have actually transacted on layer one. I think the idea of an individual human doing that will be legendary. I think,
back
you know,
to the
I
three letter agency question.
Oh boy.
Nice try.
But
where
yeah,
are you transacting on base layer?
Yeah, I'm transacting in cyberspace.
That's right. Yeah.
No, so, it's like a singularity, man. It's an event. You know, you can't see what comes past it, and it's hard to see when you've crossed the event horizon. So, like,
yeah,
you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you when you came on is, what kind of things should we be looking for as we approach the event horizon, or have we already passed it?
I mean, I think it depends on your perspective. I think different assets and different things will cross the event the metaphorical event horizon at a different point. I mean, because, you know, if we think about relation, the singularity already exists, and it's Bitcoin, and almost everything else is still outside the event horizon. That doesn't make its end state any less inevitable. But also, I mean,
let me reframe that. So, like, the singularity is like, Bitcoin has created the monetary singularity. Not Bitcoin itself being the singularity in this particular metaphor. And
is the singularity, Greg? What is a singularity?
It's a black hole.
What are you talking about?
It's a black hole.
A black hole.
Black
hole. Wow.
Yeah, so the singularity.
So we're into theoretical physics right now.
We're still talking about Bitcoin.
No, the basic.
Becca, can you explain it for me, please?
The basic metaphor. Let's go with black holes first. So black holes are a closed system, essentially, technically not, but they basically are, where energy flows in and it never leaves. And so the singularity is the point of infinite density, infinite mass, infinite, you know, whatever. And the event horizon is the point or the sphere around the singularity at which, when mass or energy cross it, or even light, it cannot leave. It inevitably falls into the gravity well that is the singularity. So the metaphor with Bitcoin being that Bitcoin is a closed system. And when monetary energy flows in, when there's an infinite amount of cash, infinite amount of gold, infinite amount of real estate, infinite amount of stocks, intelligence, education, entertainment, etc., that can flow into Bitcoin, that's the basic idea, that basically everything trends towards the end state of the most dense thing, and the most dense thing being singularity. So Greg's question being here. When do those things cross the event horizon to where their approach of the black hole becomes inevitable and faster?
Yeah, so if you imagine like a nebula.
You can't escape the gravity anymore.
If you imagine a nebula swirling around a black hole, right? That nebula is the, let's call it the economy. It's every bit and piece that makes up the economy.
And yeah, as, all value.
Yeah, and as that network, as that nebula interacts mm-hmm. with the singularity, pieces mm-hmm. of it cross the event horizon and they go into the black hole. And as you pass through the singularity, you're entering a new reality, essentially, on the inside. Doesn't bear any resemblance to anything on the outside, and you can't describe anything on the inside from the terms and stuff you have on the outside. So what I'm asking is, as the economy, the world economy, approaches this event horizon, what kind of things will we see happening? What stuff breaks? What stuff gets better? And then do you see what the world kind of looks like post-singularity?
Well, I think the first thing, I mean, really, it's no different than history. You know, in history, if you have a political system that's beginning to collapse, what happens? The smartest, the brightest, the richest, and the most educated people, along with the ones the most disenfranchised, are the ones that leave and go to the new political system. And that, I mean, we're already kind of seeing that now, in that the world, I would say, a lot of the world's smartest, brightest, richest people, along with a lot of the most disenfranchised people in the world, have already crossed the event horizon. I've already crossed the event horizon. Like, I'm already into Bitcoin, and I'm only increasingly allocated to Bitcoin. You know, it's probably everyone else in this virtual room, along with probably a lot of people watching this. These first people leaving, you know, your question being, what can we expect to see? I think this is the first thing you can expect to see, that over these last 10, 14 years or so, you see the innovators and the visionaries cross and never come back. Like, I'm never going back to bonds to have, you know, I'm never, for me, there's no point. Now, looking forward, what does that look like? I think by the time it becomes clear to a significant percentage of people that a bank run is likely, I think everything's already past the event horizon. Because that's a thing. The black hole is a visible thing. The event horizon is not a visible thing. So I don't know if I can really answer when does that moment happen. I think by the time most people realize that the black hole exists, everything will have already crossed the event horizon. And that's why I think it's so important people get off zero, is because, like, we won't know when we've reached critical mass. And this is probably going to happen so fast that by the time the market is catching up, the reality will already be 5 years ahead or 10 years ahead. And it won't unfold over 5 or 10 years. It's like 10 years of development that'll unfold over the course of months or whatever. You know, I mean, basically, you know, I mean, take the great financial crisis. What happened was years worth of bad toxic debt was being unloaded faster and faster and faster in a cascade. That's how every bank run happens. It's like all these years of growing instability and problems are suddenly offloaded in a radically short period of time. And I think that's probably what we'll have here to some degree, is that right now the system is ballooning and ballooning. Right now we're contracting a little bit because we want to pretend like we're not going to keep ballooning forever, but then we'll just divert back to ballooning forever. And then at some unknown point, the United States and the world will cross a tipping point, aka the metaphorical event horizon. And I don't know if we'll know when that is. And my worry is that what if, I think it's a very small chance, I want to make that clear, but what if we've already passed it? You know, just today, Joe Biden came out and said he wants to propose a 30% tax on Bitcoin mining, electricity or something. I haven't read it, but that's basically the proposal. And simultaneously, Russia wants and is setting up Bitcoin miners in Russia and Siberia. And so I think it's a very low probability. I make that very clear. But there's a non-zero chance that over the next few months, Russia just starts printing their own currency into complete oblivion and tries to stack as much Bitcoin as it can, forces every other nation to divert their strategy. And over the course of the next 18, 24 months, we see the world dramatically shift. I mean, I don't think
I'm willing to bet against that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that happens either.
No, I don't think that happens for many, many years. I want to make that clear. But I mean,
But
we know that
there's a
he's saying
chance.
gradually and
Yeah.
then suddenly, Sean.
I'm saying gradually and suddenly, and the problem is we don't know when suddenly is. So
But you're
in
saying
the
suddenly is going to be 18 to 24 months and we're on a freaking Bitcoin standard.
that's not what I'm saying.
Because that's what I heard.
That's what
Not
we have
18,
heard, Paul.
24
That's
months
it.
from now, 18, 24 months from.
We don't
No,
know
no.
when it's
Let's call it the cascade happening.
I was
When it
saying,
starts, it's that short.
I was saying there's a very, very
And go.
tiny, but
What
non-zero
were you saying?
chance. I was saying that I think, to my larger point being that I think there's a very small chance
Luke, Greg's
that.
just being a Luke. Greg's just being a dick. All right, okay.
Okay.
So
Yeah. All
sometimes
right.
you just gotta do a little fug
Okay.
when he's being a dick to
The
you.
point that matters is that I think that gradually and suddenly we'll have a tipping point, aka the event horizon, and we won't know when that is. I don't think we're at that point now, and I don't think we'll be at that point for many years, but I think that point will come, and I think still 90% of people will not be aware the black hole even exists until we've already passed it. So, I mean, yeah.
Could you imagine like Bitcoin shoots up to 2 million by like 2026, and then it drops down to like 500,000,
That'd be crazy.
and then Paul Krugman's on the air like Bitcoin is dropping like crazy, you know?
Yeah.
It's like that's the type of stuff that could happen.
Or what if in the 2030s or whatever, it goes to 100 million and then crashes down to 75 million or 50 million, and people say, oh, it's crashed 50%. That's ridiculous.
It's
Not
dead.
buying any of
Yeah,
that.
yeah. I'm so glad I didn't buy 85 million.
It's
What a scam, you know, but.
dead. We're literally there already, right? I
Who can
mean,
afford to
when
buy a whole
Bitcoin,
Bitcoin? I mean, you know, it's like people
when
hear me
Bitcoin
say that.
crossed $100, they were talking about,
Yeah.
will it ever hit 10K? So,
Yeah, I mean, people like that's the funny thing. I say
right,
that.
Yellow?
Yeah.
Yellow was around at that time.
Wow, really? That's awesome.
Yeah, he's like
Yellow is
six
a Yoshi.
$100. Yellow, are you a massive whale? Are you?
He was
Who
memeing in
called you
black and
fat,
white
buddy? I'm massive.
Oh, shit.
Yellow, when did you discover? I don't know your story. I've just seen memes of you online. When did you discover Bitcoin?
Discover, like only Bitcoin. What is it? Like 19,
2010, 2010.
2019, 2018. But I'm in
That's
the
great.
space from 2013, mining Feather coin and other stupid shit.
That's
Losing
great.
my money to Mt. Gox.
Yeah, Mount. Oh, Mount. No way. Wow.
Yeah, so I whatever like stupid thing, historic thing you have heard about around Bitcoin, I have done it. So, I'm not a whale. That answered your question. That's what.
No, that's still super cool. I mean, really, we're all whales, more or less, the farther
I'm
out
not a
time you go.
whale, and I didn't have the purchasing power to be a whale even back then. I
Speaking
was
of
extremely,
whales,
extremely broke.
who is the whale you were talking to who told you that hyperbitcoinization was coming
Yeah, was
for
it Emperor Palpatine?
No, it
who
was not. It was not Palpatine or Palpatine. No,
it was someone
I mean,
that
again, I
has to do with
don't know.
derivatives.
I don't know if he was. I don't know if he's a whale. And I've only read some of his thoughts, and we've only talked a little bit. But a lot of it's with derivatives and stuff I don't fully understand. But it was very interesting because I've just
Methinks
that
the
I that's
lady doth protest, because
yeah.
if you didn't talk to him that much and didn't really read much of his stuff, how did you have a private conversation which elucidated a number of new things that you didn't think about Bitcoin and
I
changed
mean,
your
when
time
I say
frame?
not much, I mean we talked for probably 2 or 3 hours.
Your best friends is
Little.
just go ahead, you could say it.
I only met him a few weeks ago online, digitally. He's not even in the U.S., so
There we
yeah.
go.
But
Cheetah
narrowing it down. We're narrowing
yeah,
it
now we're narrowing it
down.
down to only 7.5 billion or whatever.
Jack
I
Dorsey.
mean, yeah, no, like he says he wants to talk about more. And yeah, I don't even know if it's that big of a secret, but you know, it's just that there's not a lot of people on Twitter that have come from the angle of derivatives yet. You know, you have Greg Foss coming from the angle of bonds, or Michael Saylor from the CEO's perspective, or Jeff Booth from the technologist's perspectives. But there's not really anyone on Twitter with a, I guess, accounting derivatives. Yeah,
it's
it was just
interesting because I was actually thinking about derivatives this past week,
yeah.
and I posted a note to Noster about derivatives because I'm
Yeah.
like, well, what's the future? Like, do derivatives? What's the point of
Yeah.
derivatives?
Yeah.
And if you're on a hard money standard, like, what's even the point of? I guess like a farmer who has corn in the field. I get derivatives for commodities, you
Yeah.
know,
Even
but
better, Luke.
financial derivatives make no sense to me.
Who would we talk to if we wanted to learn more about derivatives?
Yeah,
Who should
that's
we
the thing.
talk to?
Do you recommend anyone?
The
Do you
Pope.
recommend
Yeah.
anybody?
No,
Yeah.
I yeah, that's the thing. I really don't know that many people either in my own personal life or on Twitter or in the
Maybe somebody
Bitcoin
you
space.
spoke to recently.
He just
Yeah,
got
I go.
it. That's
All right.
funny.
Look, we're at the part of the show where we've got to get to the really hard-hitting questions. Since Artie's not here, I want to throw this to Becca.
Okay.
So pay attention.
Oh,
Okay.
yes. Shit, let me get my notes quick.
Okay.
Yeah, don't fuck it up.
Okay. Oh, it's a lot of pressure. Yes,
That's what she
Luke,
said.
thank you for coming on and spending time with us this evening.
It was quite fun. Yeah, this is very
Yes.
different than Preston's show, I will say that.
Oh, we will
Better.
take that as a compliment. Thank you.
Better than
Much,
Preston.
much better. Suck it, Preston.
Yeah, suck it, Preston.
So, if the meme factory did exist, and we all know it doesn't, who would you like? Who would you retweet? And who would you mute?
Can they all be the same person? Yeah, I don't know. I would probably like Marcus. I liked some of Marcus's ideas. I'd probably retweet Yellow just because like all the stuff he has online is funny. Who would I mute? I don't know, myself.
No.
No, meme
Not factory
factory
member.
member.
I don't know, maybe
Very
Greg.
honorable, but you cannot fall on your
Maybe
sword.
Greg. I might mute Greg so he doesn't have me read all those ad reads.
Motherfucker. All right. Sean, you're up.
Hey Luke, do you know what happens at block height 840,000?
What, we start 840,001? I don't know.
He's not wrong.
Big talk next block, yeah.
Right, big talk next block. It would be the next halving is what happens at block height 840,000. Every
Yeah,
two
okay.
hundred
Good.
210,000 blocks, there's a
Yeah.
halving.
Yep.
We're throwing a halving party in El Salvador 2024.
No way.
And
Okay.
we want you to be there, man. Come down, enjoy it. It'll be
April
a 3-night event.
2024.
And
3 nights. Wow. Okay.
it'll be in, we're gonna have it first or second week of April 2024. So
Like a year from now.
yeah. Do
Okay.
you have a
Okay.
passport?
Yeah, I was just in Guatemala actually 3 weeks ago. So I was just down in that neighborhood.
Oh, Bitcoin. Did you go to Bitcoin
Nice.
Lake?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Did you meet Carla and Blake down there?
No, I didn't meet them,
Ah,
unfortunately. But I really want to go back there
dang.
in a year or two anyway. So maybe I'll have to do both.
Yep, come to El
So
Salvador. It's gonna be a blast, man.
I
It's gonna be so
appreciate
much
the
fun.
invite.
Yeah, we're gonna have a lot of people down there. Sailor's gonna be there. He already said he was gonna be there,
And
so
now
you
Luke's also gonna
did.
be there. Oh yeah, Preston's gonna be there. Sailor's gonna be there.
Will
Who's gonna be
Satoshi be there? Great.
Max and Stacy will be there.
Max and Stacy will
Max
be
and
there.
Stacy will be
Who's gonna be there?
President
Madison.
Did we ask
Bukele.
Adam back? Did we ask
Fox.
Adam back to come on?
I haven't asked him, no.
And we haven't even talked
Not
to Adam
yet.
back.
Not yet. Gotta ask him. All right.
Bukele is gonna be there. He just doesn't know yet.
Luke,
Yes.
you've been very generous with your time this evening. We're wrapping up the show.
Okay.
Leave this section to you to tell anybody still watching where they can find you and what you've been working on.
Yeah, well, they can find me on Twitter, Luke_Broyles, Broyles. That's where I am most of the time. I started a Noster for fun, posting a little bit there. I have a YouTube channel. You could just Google my name and find me pretty easily.
Not that easily. There's an actor trying to steal your name.
Oh yeah, I've heard that. There's a few other Luke Broyleses out there. So yeah, so YouTube. What else? Yeah, I have a couple other projects that are on the very, very back burner. Hopefully, it'll be done by the halving. So, I'll post about those when they finish up. We'll progress. And that's pretty much it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Luke. I had a blast having you on. I don't know about the rest of these suckers.
Nah, man. Thanks, Luke.
Good time, man. Luke. And yes, Voxel, this is live, but we're done now. You're late.
Yeah, you're late. No Sammy's for you.
Thanks, thanks for coming, Luke.
Yep. Bye. Thank you.
Cheers. Good night, everybody. Cheers.
Ciao.